Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. And welcome to Write Through the Roof. And today I'm speaking with Hester Fox. Hi, Hester. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you, Madeline?
I'm very well. A little introduction about Hester to start off with. So Hester is an artist and author from Boston. She has a background in historical archaeology and art history, currently working as a technician in the museums field. And her first novel, The Witch of Willow Hall, a Gothic historical fiction, is out now. Thank you so much for sparing the time to have a chat with me today, Hester.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Cool. So now you just said to me you're feeling a little bit under the weather, so maybe we need some warm-ups, you know, to make you feel maybe like a hot cup of tea with some honey or something to ease you into a bit of a chat.
Ooh, that'd be lovely.
Okay. So do you write every day?
No. So I don't sit down and write every day, but I do something that I would consider kind of helpful to my writing every day. So I read every day. I might do brainstorming. I might go for a walk and do some research. So while I'm not maybe technically at my keyboard, I consider myself doing something that will help my writing in some way.
So what would you do in terms of brainstorming? Do you have a little trick that you like to try?
Pretty much walking with music and just kind of like letting my head be empty and then kind of letting things come to me that way. I think if I focus too hard on trying to brainstorm, then it's kind of actually not as effective at all. So just kind of letting the thoughts take me where they will.
Mm. I know what you mean. Sometimes I find myself in a corner going, I need to find a solution to this, and then have to remind myself to, nope, just let it go.
Yep.
Let my brain work it out.
Exactly.
Cool. Okay, so do you have, considering you're writing about witches, do you have any writing rituals?
Yes, but they're not as interesting as witchcraft or anything like that. I wish they were. they're a little more boring. I do like to, you know, make myself a cup of tea and get a bowl of snacks or something and sit down, kind of get cozy and get my cat with me. But my other one is I also like to sometimes get out of the house. So I'll take my laptop to the coffee shop and order my medium iced vanilla latte with soy milk and sit on my favorite couch in the coffee shop. And that's kind of where I do a lot of my writing and my little ritual.
Mm. It's funny how some people like that cafe atmosphere. It helps you concentrate better.
Yeah, it really does. And I don't know why. I'm kind of somebody that before I was a writer, I would go to coffee shops and see people on their laptops, and I just wouldn't understand. I would say, isn't it too loud? How can they concentrate? What are they doing? And now it's just I'm a total convert. I don't know what it is, but it really is helpful.
Because there's even apps or – no, it's not apps, sorry – soundtracks, playlists of just – ambient coffee shop noise that I've come across.
Well, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to look that up. I had no idea.
So if you can't get to the coffee shop, you can just still listen to that ambient noise of, I don't know, the frothing milk and...
Oh my God, that's too funny.
Cool. And one last question. The key one, are you a plotter or a pantser?
Well, it's definitely changed because The Witch of Willow Hall was a totally pantsed book.
Oh.
And it took me months of writing, and then I didn't like the second half, so I just kind of like wrote to see where it took me and kind of a lot of going back and tearing it apart, which was great because I think I found a really cool story and made it work in the end. But now that I have deadlines and an editor, I definitely don't have the luxury of taking, you know, months and months to just kind of write and see where a story will take me. So I've been converted to a plotter, and I totally rebelled against it at first. I thought it would stifle creativity, but I have to admit it's really nice to have an outline going in and to just be able to write the story down, and that's kind of freeing in its own way.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. Sounds like we've got to know you a little bit more, so let's talk a bit more about your writing. So how do you describe your writing, and are there any particular themes you like to explore?
Yeah, I think I've just been discovering them as I go along, kind of picking out common themes that I seem to really be drawn to. So whether I mean to or not, now that I've almost done with my second book, I'm definitely kind of finding my footing as, you know, who I am as an author. I love the dark, and I love really, you know, gothic tropes and kind of lurid, shocking drama details. But saying that, I also really like a happy ending. Mm-hmm. So I think never say never, but almost all the stories that I write have a happy ending. And they're very, you know, dark, but kind of finding that hope in the darkness, overcoming fears and anxieties. Sorry, my cat just jumped up. She's trying to walk on computer things. I love exploring, interpersonal relationships. I don't think that's anything very new, but I love, strong female friendships or female family relationships between sisters and romantic love. So those really kind of like juicy relationships kind of set against a dark background. Mm-hmm. Kind of how I would describe most of my writing.
Cool. So I've been talking about this with some of my other friends about what draws us to the dark. And I was just wondering if you had actually thought about that with yourself, about where that even comes from.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like for me, at least, it's always been, as long as I can remember, that I liked, the children's books, like scary stories to tell in the dark, or ghost stories were kind of what I was drawn to as a kid, and that just kind of persisted. I really don't know why. I don't know if it's, I think a lot of people say it's kind of like almost exposure therapy, like it's helping you overcome some kind of deep-seated fear of maybe death or darkness, just kind of like embracing it. I don't know. I've just always loved ghost stories and horror and things like that.
Yeah, I'm with you too.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the key question I like to ask. So what do you think is the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
I have two things. I think one is more from a technical standpoint, and one is just kind of like an overall writing strategy, kind of. So from a technical standpoint, and I forget where I came across it, I think it was like an article that came up on Twitter back when I started writing a few years ago, and it was about making every word count, which kind of seems obvious, but the article was really helpful in breaking down what it meant, kind of making every word pull its weight in a sentence. So using words that would really bring the five senses to life. So you could pack a lot of punch into short sentences, or just use words that were very evocative and vivid. And once I kind of realized that I didn't need, extraneous, paragraphs and paragraphs of description, that you could just use the words that you were going to use anyway to tell the story in a more thoughtful way, kind of bring out emotion. That was kind of like a really, like a light bulb moment for me. So that was probably the most helpful thing that I found, technically speaking. And then just kind of in general, what's improved my writing is definitely having critique partners. So I work with two other writers, and we share our manuscripts with each other as we write, kind of usually on chapter by chapter basis, and we give each other feedback. It's really valuable for having somebody else's eyes on your work. It definitely also helps me push through that first draft when you just want to give up a lot, because you know somebody else is waiting to see it. So that's something I highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. So back to that making every word count. So in your writing process, do you, in your first draft, are you one of those careful crafter of every word of each sentence before moving on to the next sentence? Or do you do a bit of a purge to get to get the thoughts down and then go back later to craft that?
So it's definitely more of a purge, and I don't know, I'm not really a musician, but I kind of liken it to like a composing process where I'll almost have the cadence and the rhythm that I want in my head, but I don't have the lyrics yet. So a lot of my first drafts, my paragraphs will be brackets, and inside the brackets will be something about her being happy here, something about the color of the sky here, something about this. So just like very general ideas, kind of in the direction I wanted to go, and even down to like the rhythm of sentences where I'll know how I want the sentence to sound, but I won't have the exact beats of it yet. So I'll leave blanks, and then when I come back in to clean up the first draft, I'll go in and I'll fill in all those details.
So could you expand a little bit more about the rhythm there? So how do you make notes for yourself so that you can remind yourself about the rhythm you wanted?
It's just really messy, and it's almost like in the moment when you're writing, sometimes it's hard to like have recall for, you know, there's a word that you want to use, but without maybe going to the thesaurus or something, or it's just on the tip of your tongue. And that's where I lose my concentration a lot. I have very poor concentration. So just to keep myself in the moment, I will, even if it's just, I know it's going to be one word there describing something, I might just write a whole like kind of train of thought sentence to myself just to help me remember what I'm trying to say. So I'm trying to think of an example right now. Maybe I wanted to like liken the main character's eyes to like misty mountaintops or something, but I can't quite find the right word, and I don't want to, you know, kind of go into purple prose. So I'll just be something here about her eyes being, you know, the color of mist on the mountaintop on a rainy day. And then I'll just, you know, put that in brackets or highlight it. And then when I come back, I can kind of refine that down.
Mm. Yeah, good. Wow. That sounds really helpful. I'm interested to think about that myself.
Yeah, it really helps you kind of stay in the moment and not get, you know, wiggled down by those details.
And if you're like me, you use thesaurus.com and accidentally look at Twitter at the same time. And
yes, that is exactly right. I have both of those tabs open on my browser right now.
Sometimes I force myself. I do have a paperback Roger's Thesaurus here next to me, and sometimes I'm like, nope, look in the book.
That's a good idea. I need to get the hard copy of that.
Cool. So are you trying anything new at the moment? You did mention that you are just finishing the second book.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe that goes back to a little bit to when we were talking about pantsing versus plotting. So the second book, I'm just doing revisions now that I got back from my editor, but this will have been the first book that I plotted out with an outline. So that's definitely new. It does make revisions a lot easier because I can kind of go back and rearrange things and look at my outline and see where things aren't working. So it's definitely a little more technical and can sometimes be a bit of a headache, but I think in the long run, it's been a time saver.
Cool. Okay, great. So you talked earlier about how you like to read, and you make sure you get some reading in every day. So what writers inspire you?
Well, let's see. A lot of 19th century authors. I love, I don't know, not super relevant. I love, you know, Jane Austen, Dickens, Thomas Hardy is a big one. And then not 19th century, but a little more recent, Shirley Jackson and Daphne du Maurier are probably two of my big ones. But speaking today, there's tons of authors writing that I'm just obsessed with. Susanna Kearsley is probably one of my favorite authors. She writes like time slip novels. So usually there's a historical component and then a modern day main character who kind of finds herself going back in time. And I love her writing because she really balances like really well-researched historical fiction with a great romance plot and usually something kind of suspenseful. So she's a big favorite. I love Simone St. James. She does really cool, like, a lot of ghost stories or stories about psychics, usually around World War I in England. And she's the same really well-researched historical fiction and really compelling romance subplots. I just started a book today, actually. It's really good so far. It's called Unbury Carol. And I forget the name of the author. I think it's Joshua Mallerman or Mailerman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, have you read that?
Not that one, but I've read, what's the one with the where everyone has to be blind? I think it's a previous book.
Okay. I haven't read that one. Yeah, I really like this one so far. It's a woman.
It's called Bird Box, if I remember correctly.
Okay, I'll have to look that one up, because, yeah, I'm really enjoying his style so far.
Cool, excellent. So, tell us a little bit about The Witch of Willow Hall. So, what inspired that?
That was kind of a culmination of things. I had started writing maybe the previous year. I had a friend that was doing National Novel Writing Month. So I had never really thought about writing before. And I was like, oh, people write novels. Like, anybody can do it. I just never even considered it. So I thought that would be fun. So I'd started writing, but I hadn't really found a genre that I really, you know, felt comfortable writing in. I didn't really know what kind of stories I wanted to tell. So with that as background, I was doing an internship for my museum studies program, where I worked for this organization that owns historic homes around New England. And I worked in their collections department, so I would go out to these different historic homes around the area and kind of address collections-based problems in the houses. So I'd see a lot of really cool historic houses from, you know, the last 400 years or so. And one house in particular just really captured my imagination. It was called the Barrett House, and it's in New Hampshire, right on the border with Massachusetts. And there was just something about this house. It was kind of, it's in the middle of nowhere. It's very rural. It's very quiet. It's a big Georgian house, kind of like wild nature all around it. And just being there, I thought, well, this would be a great setting for a story. So I just had to figure out a story to set there. And then that kind of came from all the things I love about New England, just the history, the witchcraft, the nature. Just kind of like a love letter to New England set at this beautiful house.
So the research, I imagine you could squeeze that into your day job as well as your part-time job of writing at home.
Yeah, I definitely think a lot of the research, you know, I didn't do a lot of sit-down research with books. I think a lot of it came by osmosis just because of my background in history and kind of working with objects from the time period. So that was really nice because I felt like I had a pretty comfortable grasp on, you know, a lot of the history, and working in the houses was really helpful because I kind of got that, you know, as close as you can get to time traveling, where I got the experience of moving around in the space where my characters would have moved around and interacting with the objects they would have interacted with.
Yeah, cool. And I imagine you wouldn't have got, because I'm just daunted by historical fiction. And I love to read it, but I just think that research. But I imagine you wouldn't have got bogged down so much with thinking about all those perfect details because you were amongst it during the day.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure, I just feel like, I guess, nobody was alive then that's alive today and reading this, so nobody really knows. So you do have a little bit of certain, like, leeway where you're almost just trying to hit the right note of what it would feel like. So it's you wanting to be historically accurate, but it's also wanting to write through the lens, you know, for a modern-day reader that will be able to connect with it. That said, when I got my edits and revisions back, I definitely had lots of notes from editor from my editor about, you know, this word wasn't used then, or find another term for this. So I did a kind of a lot of learning on my feet about, you know, what would have been said or what kind of words were used at the time.
Great. Okay, so I might just start to wrap up now. So firstly, you mentioned that you're working on a second book. Can you talk about it? Or you started something, a third book already that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah. So my second book, I think it's up on Goodreads now. So it's just starting to kind of like come out into the world. It's called The Widow of Pale Harbor. It's another, you know, gothic historical fiction set in New England. But this one's a little different than the first. It's set in Maine in the 1840s, kind of against the backdrop of Edgar Allan Poe mania, when all of Poe's stories were coming out in the 1840s. And it's a very loosely gender-flipped retelling of Beauty and the Beast, where it features an agoraphobic widow in the town who's kind of like... there's a lot of local lore built up around her because, you know, she never comes out of her house, and a lot of suspicions about her and what happened to her first husband, who died suddenly and mysteriously a few years ago. And then a young minister who moves to the town and kind of becomes fascinated with her and the relationship that springs up from that. So I'm really excited about it. Kind of neck deep in revisions right now, but it'll be out next fall. October 2019.
Mm. And you mentioned that it was very different to go from the taking as much time as you like to write your book to having an editor standing over you saying, where's the next one?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good because it kind of forces me to cut out a lot of, you know, the procrastination and probably don't really need all the time I was taking for the first one. So it's definitely like a leaner process, but it's still hard to adjust.
I can imagine. Okay, so I'll let you get back to your revisions then, because we don't want angry editors, do we?
No.
So if people want to find you and find out more about your work, where's the best place to find you online?
So my website is hesterfox.com. And that'll have all the links to my social media and upcoming books and information like that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sparing the time to have a chat with me today. It's been really helpful.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to Write Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?